Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review. This is episode number 90. We are closing in on episode number 100 very, very rapidly. We're very much looking forward to that. Now, tonight, we are live on both DLive and RadioAlbion.com. DLive, you can find our video. We are live there on video. We are also live on RadioAlbion.com. Now, RadioAlbion.com is the home of Sven Longshanks. He has video and audio only. So if you want to watch video, that is fantastic. But you can also just watch an or listen to an audio only stream. If you have any form of problem with buffering, if you have any problem with DLive, because some people on mobile data networks rather than wired computers or home routers have a bit of a problem with DLive. So you can always hop on over to RadioAlbion.com. And of course, if you're enjoying this show but can't catch it all, or if you've missed a show, if you've missed my weekly videos, you can go over to BitChute. The replay of this show will be on BitChute, and that will be up tonight as soon as the show is over. I download the high-resolution file, and I upload it to BitChute. So this will be up for replay ASAP. Now, importantly, if you would like to contribute to the show, please use Entropy. My Entropy link is on my Gab, it is on my Telegram, and it is just about to go into the DLive live chat. Now, as you know, we have a bit of a problem with DLive. We have been, unfortunately, demonetized. So I have to turn lemons on. Lemons aren't always on throughout the show because we're not allowed to do that when we're talking about politics. So we have special times where the lemons are turned on. So if you want to make a donation or subscribe to the channel, you have to wait till then. But anybody can watch the show through Entropy or contribute through Entropy at any time during the show. And if you want to make a financial contribution, if you want to make a super chat through Entropy, all paid donations are read out live on the show or asked to the relevant member of the panel. And if you want to ask non-paid questions, you can also do that. They are voted upon and the best ones rise to the top. The less good ones go down the pile and the best ones are asked to the panel every week. And if we can keep questions focused on current events and on Sarah and her particular journey, that would be great, because myself and Laura are doing two more streams this week, and I'll be talking about those in a minute. You can also contribute to me via Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is available on my BitChute, or you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, where I can send you my cryptocurrency addresses, or you can get my bank details if you wish to make a bank transfer, or you can write to me if you need help or advice or anything like that. And my email address again is mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, I briefly mentioned that myself and Laura would be doing two more streams this week. On Friday night, we have the monthly PA stream, where it's all going to be about PA. It's all going to be about what we've been up to, about future developments, about things we've got planned, about campaigns and updates about the Electoral Commission and other such things. That is going to be a very good high energy show. That's 7 p.m. on Friday. And then on Sunday at 8 p.m., we have the first of our book clubs. And this week's or this month's book is going to be The Transgender Industrial Complex. So that is going to be very good. Now, if you are on Twitter, please share this stream. We want to get as many viewers as possible. And we have been struggling because obviously I've been kicked off Twitter and we are facing more and more deplatforming. And we're not just facing deplatforming, but many others are facing the same deplatforming. So it is very hard to get the message out there about shows, about events, etc. So if you can help with that, that would be really, really appreciated. I'm sure Laura and Jason have already tweeted it out, but if you haven't, please retweet them. And as I said, please do make sure that you share the stream. That would be very helpful. Now, one other small thing before we get started. I've been asked to raise this. I've had a number of emails about this from different people. And on Saturday, an event, a nationwide event is taking place, and that is called the Great Reopening. And there is going to be a mass day of public defiance against these horrendous tyrannical lockdowns. And many business owners are choosing to reopen their business against the government guidelines. And there's going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of businesses doing this nationwide. So if you want to take part in the Great Reopening, you can do that. You can do that by either opening your business or going out and supporting local businesses that are taking part in that. So please, please do that. That would be really, really helpful. And myself and Laura will talk more about that on Friday night before the event. So quickly, before we get over to Sarah, I will introduce my co-hosts, Jason and Laura. Jason, how have you been, my friend, and who's on tap?
Magnificent. I've always been magnificent, and we will continue to be magnificent despite all of the anti-white bills and legislation and executive orders the anti-whites are bringing against us. But we will thrive even where others are not able to survive. This coming week, Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to have the one and only back from the deep, dark north. Squatting Slav will be with the great Mr. George and myself, and we're going to be having a heck of a good time with him, celebrating as we continue to grow in our strength and white positivity. And I want to highlight one of our content creators who are going free, Budapest Babe. And I will be dropping the link to Budapest Babe in the live chat over the course of the show today. It is wonderful to see you all. And it is truly magnificent to be with these two beautiful, intelligent, courageous women that we are with today. And of course, the equally handsome Mark Collett. And I will pass it back over to him so we can get rolling with this magnificent show.
I'm pleased you included me in the compliments about people's looks. Otherwise, I'd have been very much hurt. Laura, how are you, my dear? Are you having a good time in lockdown? And what have you been up to?
Hello, Mark. Well, yeah, I'm doing all right, thanks. Last week was quite a difficult week, but I took a few days off and then jumped straight back into things Monday of this week. And yeah, things are going well. Patriotic Alternative is very busy. Obviously, we've got three streams together this week, which I'm looking forward to. So yeah, things are going good. Just want to say hello to Jason, and that's Sam getting in my camera shot. I think he wants attention. Hello to Jason. Hello to Sarah as well. I know we've spoken on email a little bit, but it's nice to finally meet you. And hello to everyone in the audience as well. I hope you're having a lovely Wednesday.
Well, thank you very much. Well, let's get straight into this then. Please remember, like, share the stream, and use Entropy if you want to contribute. Now, this guest tonight is a guest that I am really, really happy to have on the show. However, this isn't going to be one of my usual introductions. My usual introductions for guests talk about the amazing work they do. But although Sarah does amazing work, she is a farmer, she grows organic food, she is a mother, she is a housewife, and she is also a homeschooler, so she does exceptional work. And she is also somebody who stands up for people of European descent. But that isn't why she's here tonight. She's here tonight because of what she has been through. And she will obviously have the chance to tell her story. She's a very courageous woman. She is very upstanding. And she has faced what I believe is the worst persecution by the left and by the establishment that I've really ever heard of. This woman was selling her wares at a local farmer's market, and she was outed as someone who advocated for the rights of people of European descent. She was outed as somebody who was standing up for white well-being. And after this, she had faced, as I said, the worst abuse I've ever heard of. Not only did Antifa attend the farmer's market and form basically a blockade around her stall, threaten her, prevent her selling her goods, but when the local authorities were contacted about this, including the mayor, they sided with Antifa, and they went as far as refusing, not only refusing to condemn Antifa and stop them doing what they were doing, but the local mayor went as far as closing down the farmers market and re-establishing a private market for sellers on an invitation-only basis, with everyone invited but Sarah. Now, I've been listening to her story today. I was aware of her before this. I was aware of some of the facts, but I've listened to her full story today, and it's an incredible story. It's a very harrowing story. It's a sad story, but it also speaks volumes about her as a person, about her inner strength, about her fortitude, and about her resolve. The fact that she's still here, the fact that she hasn't cracked, the fact these people haven't broken her down speaks volumes about her as a person. And that is why I am so proud to introduce her tonight. Sarah, please introduce yourself to our audience. Please tell us a bit about yourself. We'll obviously go through your whole story tonight. Myself, Jason, and Laura will ask you questions. But start by just telling us a bit about yourself, what you do for a living, a bit about your family, a bit about your beliefs, and also, most importantly, how we can get in touch with you and how our audience can contribute to your legal and financial struggle against these people.
Thank you so much. That was quite an introduction. It's an honor to be here with all of you. It's an honor to meet you and Laura for the first time in person. I really appreciate the work that you all are doing with Patriotic Alternative as well. And yeah, thank you for the intro. My goodness, I mean, where do I start? It has been a really scary time. It's been such a long ordeal, and in preparing for this interview, kind of recollecting the events that have occurred since early 2019, I realized that, my goodness, there really has been a lot. And I think that over time, it's almost like I formed a thicker skin in a weird way. Where do I start? I suppose I would say it started with rumors that circulated locally. I should tell the audience, I was certainly an anti-white years ago. I had kind of spent a lot of years living in a college town. And even though I had grown up with a fairly traditional family type of environment with hardworking parents, spending those years living in a college town, and of course, just all of the indoctrination that comes with the public school system and, you know, quote unquote, mainstream culture, MTV, and all of these things, you know, it's like death by a thousand cuts to one's identity, right? So by the time I reached the age of a young woman living in this college town, I certainly became pretty much a radical anti-white. I mean, I was one who identified as Antifa. I didn't really participate in activism with them or anything like that, but I wanted to be like them. I was very much idolizing the kind of like the feeling as though we were the underdogs battling, you know, the and I hate to say this, but like the big evil white man, right? Because that's what's taught and promoted. And I had a drastic change, and There's a quote that sticks out in my mind from listening to an interview years ago as this change was going on within me, which was former liberals fall the hardest. And I would certainly say that was me. I had been so far left that, you know, I was like many uninformed young people touting, you know, little random quotes from Karl Marx, you know, all workers for equal wage. I mean, just straight up communist crap. I've never read Karl Marx. I was not educated about any of those things, but these are the talking points that are regurgitated when you are a young woman living in a college town. I had considered myself, you know, quote unquote, feminist. And essentially, it was a combination of things that caused the change to occur, or the awakening, I suppose I would call it. One of the things that contributed to it was I had become a mother, and I have a white male son. At the time, I had one white male son, and now I have three white male sons, my husband and I. And as my eldest son was coming into school age, I started realizing that many of our peers, other couples who we would get together for potlucks and dinners and stuff like that, had very different views than my husband and I did. So even though I was, you know, quote unquote, far left, I wasn't nearly as radical and far left as they were. So for instance, conversations with other parents where they would kind of drop these statements, just which were shocking to me, about how they were going to teach their children about LGBTQ and transgender and all sorts of really degenerate, sexually depraved sex education and stuff like that, you know, sitting around. And this is pretty explicit here, so excuse me. But, you know, for instance, sitting around a fire with a group of people and my husband and I looking at each other, realizing we don't fit in with these people anymore. Them making statements about what type of, you know, terrible movies they like to watch, for instance, right? And looking at each other going, oh my gosh, you know, this is not us. So that was kind of occurring. Simultaneously, a friend had come to me and visited, and we hadn't seen each other in a long time. And she introduced some information to me, and I was shocked at the time that she had what I considered abhorrent views, because I had been indoctrinated to think that any sort of healthy identity and who we are as a people, you know, the indoctrination is that that's bad, and you have kind of a visceral reaction that's been programmed in. So initially I was concerned about the friend, and I, you know, kind of got into a debate with her, and I ended up looking into some of the links and reading some of the articles. And just to give you an example, one of the articles was, I think it had been written by Greg Johnson, and it started out by talking about an African migrant on a subway in France. And I remember reading a line that something like, why is there an African migrant on a subway in France? And reading that line invoked a feeling of, oh my gosh, like, oh, that's not okay. Like, why, that's a bad thing. Why is he saying that? Right. So realizing how deeply ingrained some of these thought processes were. At the same time, the migrant invasion was really intense. This is back in 2015, 2016, really intense in Europe, and having conversations with, you know, people I knew about what was going on, and them saying, oh no, those are white supremacist conspiracy theories. And I'm like, well, here's video footage right here. You know, why is BBC showing police officers harming this couple on train tracks, when over here I have the full video and I could see that the man grabbed his own wife and put her on the train tracks, you know? So realizing the media, you know, that I thought was alternative media, like Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. I mean, realizing that that was not alternative media at all, discovering true independent media, and essentially just, my gosh, I mean, a cascade from there. And I think that also what really caused me to become more firm in my understanding of the world is the way that my peers behaved when I would try to discuss any of this with them. So I suppose going back, so there had been some rumors, and of course we were, you know, spoken about in hushed whispers. And, you know, as a woman, perhaps Laura and other women who are watching, you might be able to relate the loss of female friends. So Antifa had began coming to market in 2018, and our home, our mailbox was vandalized in 2018 with fake blood, which this was the time that our 9-year-old son found the fake blood, and they had spray painted fascists on the sidewalk. And I guess just to reiterate, I mean, I had maybe a couple of conversations with people who I felt were close friends. It wasn't as though I was going around disseminating all my new ideas and beliefs, but, you know, essentially, the mainstream teaching to white children in America today is to be absolutely ashamed and full of guilt. And let me give you an example of other facts that I discovered. So I had grown up with the thinking that all of my ancestors who settled and lived in America had slaves. That was just, as a child, that's just what you think. And regardless of, we're not getting into a discussion about that, and obviously slavery was terrible and our people were the first to outlaw it and end it, you know, coming to realize it was only 3-4% of white Americans who owned slaves. These are facts that I was angry that I had not learned them before. Why was it that as an adult now that I was learning important bits and pieces of history that had been intentionally omitted from my public school upbringing? So all of these things. So anyhow, going back to the farmer's market, we have peacefully sold there. We've never discussed our politics at market. My husband and I do this for a living. We are organic farmers. We grow all sorts of, excuse me, heirloom and classic produce. We don't use any chemicals. We're very much, you know, about caring for the earth and sustainable agriculture on a small scale. We feel very strongly that small farms, and especially organic small farms, are extremely important and help, you know, with food security in local communities, but also nationwide. And I've long been critical, even back in my anti-white days, I've long been critical of industrial agriculture and the harsh treatment of, well, harsh is putting it lightly, the absolutely inhumane and cruel treatment of animals, and these huge farms that are just singular crops with heavy GMOs and Roundup and all these toxic chemicals. So I've long been critical of that. And we have been very active in our community, regardless of the political leanings of various projects and organizations over the years. We have donated. We have, you know, helped grow plants and donated time and teaching. I've taught workshops and we've led garden tours. And, you know, it never goes both ways, right? As soon as the local community discovered that I was no longer in their anti-white club, we were canceled from everything. And it was to the point where we couldn't even give produce away. In 2019 and 2020, we contacted a couple of local agencies who collect extra produce from farmers and distribute it to low-income families. They wouldn't even take produce from us. So, you know, it's just really been, and I know I'm kind of jumping around and I apologize, but, you know, rein me in if you need to nail down a specific question. But yes, essentially Antifa started coming to market in 2018. There were multiple incidents where we called the police, filed reports, and that was when it kind of started. But what really blew everything up was in 2019. I had been a member of American Identity Movement. And prior to that, I had been a member of Identity Europa, and many people were getting doxxed in the spring of 2019 due to Antifa hacking groups having infiltrated private chats and connecting clues, as we know how doxing works. And, you know, I had always said that, you know, kind of to myself, well, nobody wants to get doxxed. And if I were to get doxxed, as having been a member of this organization, which I knew as a peaceful activism organization, as a, you know, a fraternal and community organization, you know, a lot of the same types of things I see that you guys are doing with Patriotic Alternative are things that we were doing, getting together for hikes, you know, cooking food together and having community. And the people that I met through that organization have remained good friends, many of them. Very good people, law-abiding citizens who simply don't hate themselves for being white and who don't desire, you know, for us to become hated minorities in our own country. So I'd always kind of said to myself, yes, nobody wants to get doxxed. And if I were to get doxxed, I would, you know, stand behind it. And I would probably have to have a few uncomfortable conversations with some of my local friends in my community who many probably, you know, still were under the impression that I was still anti-white, radical leftist Sarah that I had been in my younger years. But I stood behind it. Well, unfortunately, the terrible thing that happened was that I really wasn't prepared for the level of lying that the radical anti-whites do when they dox people. So rewinding, there was an instance in 2018 where some woman who apparently has a criminal record, unbeknownst to anyone in the organization at the time, had filled out an application and tried to join the organization and had lied, saying she was married and was, you know, excited about starting a family. And I was invited to meet her since she was a new member, and we went out to dinner. And, you know, getting together for dinner was not uncommon. I didn't suspect much. I wasn't very impressed with her. She brought her husband with her to the dinner, and I never saw them again. They were removed. The woman was removed from the organization a day or a week. Very shortly after that, I received a message that just said, "We've removed this person from the organization because they're not a good fit." I didn't know anything about what had happened, but prior to her trying to join our organization, her and her husband had committed some vandalism crime on a synagogue in northern Indiana. And fast back forward to 2019, when when I got doxxed, this couple had been apparently prosecuted. And so Emily Gorzinski and other international anti-whites who call themselves Antifa were publishing information. And one of the things they published about this couple and the crime were excerpts of their FBI interview. Well, deep in this 250-page document, there's a conversation happening between law enforcement and this young man who was the husband of the gal. And the law enforcement is asking him, have you ever been in this organization? Have you ever been in that organization? Have you ever met anybody in this organization? And one of the questions he said was, have you ever met anyone in Identity Europa? And then the man says, well, yes, as a matter of fact, just a few days ago, we met people named Sarah and then also my husband's name at a cafe. And, you know, so our names were mentioned. And then also he mentioned my online handle that I was using at the time. So it's very, that whole situation is really still very mysterious to me. I don't trust that was organic even to this day. And we're still looking into that because come to find out later, this female had a history of committing similar crimes at other churches with other boyfriends. So it's, you know, really wild. And what's the wildest thing is that, well, sorry, let me get back to the first point. Because that was leaked, everybody, all of these radical anti-whites and Antifa took those few lines and just made up this horrible, all of these horrible lies about us. And some of the things that these people were saying were that we were, you know, that we had trained youth to commit hate crimes. I mean, that we had, I mean, and I don't even want to say what they said because it's so bad. But you can imagine, I'm sure all of your listeners know, and I know that you three are very familiar with the fact that these people will lie and not think twice about it. And if they had just listed the facts and said, here's Sarah Dye, here's her handle, here are her statements, that would have been true, but they didn't. They just, it was scary because essentially thousands and thousands of people locally now had this idea in their head about my husband and I, that we were some sort of criminals or something, which is the farthest thing from the truth. I mean, I don't even have a speeding ticket. My husband and I have never been involved in any sort of crime. We've never been investigated for any sort of crime. You know, we're simply just white Americans who are absolutely not ashamed to be who we are and who are homeschooling, and we're not going to raise our sons to hate themselves. That's unacceptable to these people. So really quickly, I wanted to add on another bit of something I don't think I've mentioned in other interviews, because again, I need to write everything down. One day, perhaps I'll write a book, but sometimes I forget details. One of the interesting factors of all of this that nobody seems to be discussing is that I found out about this woman's history just last year by Googling her name. So it's not as though it takes some sort of expert researcher to find out what this woman had been involved in. There are multiple newspaper articles detailing the similar crimes and vandalism to churches of all various kinds locally. And to my knowledge, she's never been arrested. To my knowledge, she's free and sat free all through the summer of 2019 while this Antifa group called, ironically, No Space for Hate was organizing protests and harassing me and us. So it's like, isn't that odd? I mean, wouldn't you think that if they actually had a concern about quote unquote, you know, white supremacist terrorists, that they would be perhaps going to the people who actually committed the crime and taking up an issue with them? But no, it was us. We were a really fun target for them. We were very popular in the community. Our farm had been featured on the front page of local newspapers. We work really hard and we put out some of the, you know, and excuse me for boasting, but some of the highest quality, most beautiful produce in the state. And I mean, our farm had been featured with the Bloomington Community Farmers Market on their own marketing materials, pictures of our booth. We were very well loved in the community. And, you know, I think that was one of the reasons why these sickos got so much joy out of trying to destroy us. So I'm kind of rambling here, but.
I just wanted to ask you something, because one of the things that hit home the most with me is when I've heard other interviews, you've talked about the way Antifa came to the farmers market. You've talked about the trouble they caused there. But the fact is, the local mayor is actually complicit in all of this, isn't he? And I think this is something that's very important, because here in the UK, we have often seen Antifa turn up. They've attacked people. They've committed criminal acts. They've done lots of things which aren't very good. We'll put it politely like that. But in this case, all of this was aided and abetted by an elected official who let them get away with it all. And could you tell a little bit about that before Jason and Laura ask you any questions? Also, I'd like to say to the audience now, I'm going to open the DLive donations now for 5 minutes. So if anyone wants to contribute, they can do now.
Yes, thank you. Well, interestingly, there's a little bit of backstory to the mayor as well, which is that he was formerly a customer of ours. I had done landscaping for him and his wife at his residence at least 2 times. I had even been invited back another time, but got too busy and was not able to go back. Now, this was a few years ago, but we certainly knew each other and would see each other regularly at the farmer's market. And when all of this started in 2019, when this whole thing blew up, it started out with him walking by the booth, giving us scornful looks, but then he began making statements publicly condemning our farm, using veiled messaging to make sure to get the very clear point, and not just veiled messaging, but sometimes direct messaging, to make the point very clear that he condemned our farm and found us to be abhorrent, to find our views to be abhorrent, which he doesn't know my views. I've never had a conversation with him and explained what my political views are, but yet he's able to make announcements that my views are abhorrent. Interesting, right? And also he's quoted as saying that he supported this group called No Space for Hate and their activities at the farmers market. And this is a group who is on record as having raised money, for Antifa bail funds at the farmers market. So, they clearly were collaborating with Black Bloc Antifa. I have pictures of them marching with Black Bloc Antifa. They later tried to backpedal and distance themselves from some of these violent Antifa groups, but they're clearly, meshed together, as we know. The mayor absolutely supported them and condemned us. And the other thing that happened throughout 2019, and this was just, I'm not kidding you, I mean, this was like so shocking to be observed all of this. And throughout 2019, it was just like one thing after another, and it just kept coming and kept coming. And for instance, one of the things that kept coming was these meetings. They were allowing these groups to organize these public forums and meetings inside City Hall about us, about our farm. And, I had a couple of people at one point say, well, why don't you go? Why don't you go up there and, go down there and you take your turn on the podium and tell them that they're all wrong? And I thought, are you kidding me? We'll get killed. When you have a packed house with over 100 people, I don't know, maybe hundreds, I don't know the exact count, who are all there filled with hate. And it's always this core group of radical anti-white lefties. They were giving speeches and just some of them completely making stuff up. It was really wild. But meetings in the City Hall, which is adjacent to, it's on site at the farmer's market. The farmer's market takes place in the parking lot of City Hall. So, the meetings were there. They had flyers. They were holding signs, walking by, screaming at us, harassing our customers, calling our customers Nazi sympathizers, and videotaping themselves doing it. It's just crazy. And then we had a flood on our farm in 2019 as well. And it flooded a lot of our produce, not all, luckily, but they then made advertisements saying, don't buy Nazi feces melons, without using the word that they use so that I'm not cussing on your show. Pins, don't buy from Nazis. I mean, just these over and over, thousands of times getting called these hateful, derogatory racial slurs. There were a few instances where our children were at market. Our children were at market the first time that Black Bloc Antifa came to our booth. I mean, my boys were sitting in the pickup truck and, here they come marching up. I know I've mentioned this on Jason's show, but I'm not sure if your audience is aware. The Indiana Antifa groups are very violent. They have a history of committing serious felony violence. There was a major instance that stands out is the Tinley Park attacks of 2012. And I mention this a lot of times because I really want everybody to go and watch these videos on YouTube. I want them to see what these people did, and I want them to understand that the 18 hooded Black Bloc Antifa who stormed into that cafe and beat people with carpenter hammers, tire irons, and batons, that only 5 of them were arrested and apprehended. So the rest of them have been at large.
Can I just interject there and ask, you say 5 of them were apprehended. When they were apprehended, were there any charges brought against them? Because here in the UK, and this is just for a UK audience, you can be arrested, but it only goes against you if you're actually charged with a crime. So you can be arrested and then you can just be released the next day and nothing happens. Were these people actually charged with any form of offences?
The Tinley Park 5 were charged. I believe at least 4 or maybe even all 5 of them were. And they had reduced sentences and were represented pro bono by an attorney who called them heroes and said he would gladly do it again. So again, this was something that occurred in 2012, but the relevance is that we've seen at least one of the actual felons. He was organizing Black Bloc Antifa in front of our booth. So I have pictures too, if people go and look through some of the things I posted online. I don't know if I should say the man's name on the show or not, but this was an individual who was charged in the Tinley Park 5 as one of the violent felons. And he is seen organizing the Black Bloc Antifa in front of our booth while my children were sitting in a pickup truck. So I know what these people were there to do, potentially. I'm glad that violence didn't happen, but when you have these interactions with people who have a history of it, then it's good to be wary. There's a female also who was a suspect in the Tinley Park attacks, but was never charged, who's also been at our booth at least once or twice harassing us and screaming. She brought her teenage son with a baseball bat one day. And so I guess my point to all of this too, is that with everything that happened with us at this farmer's market and with the well-known knowledge, and I've told the police this information, the government, the mayor, the market staff, I've all told them about this man, this felon. Why have they not, and perhaps they have, and I don't know, but I sure hope that they have reopened that investigation for what it's worth to what some of those Indiana Antifa did in Chicago back in 2012. Because they clearly haven't changed. They're still up to the same stuff. So yeah, it's been scary. You have to constantly watch over your shoulder. And even just going to the grocery store, which I do try to avoid that town as much as I can for grocery shopping and things like that. But you know, sometimes I still have to go in. It's the nearest town with things that we need, their health food stores and things like that. So and just going to market week after week and wondering, wow, you know, is somebody going to walk up and do something stupid? It's been crazy. And yeah, all supported by market staff. They gave the group No Space for Hate free booth spaces. They didn't even charge them the fee that they're supposed to charge all organizations and nonprofits in the what they call the free speech area. They waived their fee. They broke the rules for them and allowed them to sell their stickers and their signs and their t-shirts from their booth, which is totally against the rules. Only farm vendors and prepared food vendors are supposed to sell products. The nonprofits or people who are distributing information in the free speech zone are never supposed to sell products. They allowed them to sell products there. There's a picture of the mayor standing with these people, smiling, him and his wife, with their No Space for Hate t-shirts on for a photo op. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable what they allowed to go on. We have a great case against them now, though. I mean, that's the one positive thing that has come out of this, is that we've got a solid case than the way that they treated us, which there's more details that if you want me to go further into that, I can. But essentially, at one point, they were the market.
You can do, or Laura and Jason can always jump in with any questions. So, If Laura and Jason have got any questions for you, they can, or you can go further into what you're saying. So it's up to those guys.
I just want to say something. It shouldn't take too long, but really, I just want to commemorate you, Sarah, on not backing down, because there are plenty of people who are, you know, bigger and physically stronger than you who would have backed down in that situation. And I think if you haven't experienced something like this yourself, you don't really understand how tough and how frustrating it can get. I watched your interview with Lana Lochteff on Red Ice, and I watched the videos that you shared of, so Sarah basically has a little stall in the market selling fruit and veg, and they were basically Antifa, maybe 10, 15 of them dressed in black with masks, stood around her booth. And as customers were trying to get in, there was a little old lady with a Zimmer frame. She had to push through them to get in to buy some fruit and veg. They stand there intimidating. They're just vile, disgusting people. And I don't think anything I've experienced is as bad as what you've experienced, but I have encountered Antifa before. And I think when you first encounter them, the hate and the lies that they throw your way, you do sort of think, whoa, is this me? Am I the bad person? Have I done something wrong? But then as you get to know them, you realize that it isn't them at all. It's just a total reflection on them. I mean, at Patriotic Alternative, we've had them complaining about us helping homeless people. We've had them complaining about us picking up litter. We've had them complaining about us doing baking competitions. They're just disgusting people. And I was actually out with my husband about a month ago, and it was just me and Sam. It was before a Patriotic Alternative event, and three Antifa turned up, dressed in black with masks on. Walked towards me and Sam, pushed me out of the way, and then went to beat up Sam, went to physically beat him up. Now, luckily, my husband is quite tall. He's 6'2", and he's a boxer, not a professional boxer, but he does boxing, and he was able to fight all three of them off. And I think they just got tired eventually. He tied them off and they ran off. But if Sam wasn't a boxer, then, you know, he would have been beat up, and they just get away with it. And on the day, I actually found it kind of funny that we won 3-1, but the next day when the adrenaline had dropped, I was so angry that they did that and thought that they could get away with that, because it wasn't even to me, it was to my husband. Like, do you not know what a fantastic person he is, how kind he is, how hardworking he is, how family focused he is? None of his morals are based on hate at all, they're based on love, and I'm so proud to be married to him. And how dare you just attack him in the street? Do you know what I mean? And that's what we're dealing with. They're just disgusting people. So you've stood your ground, and I don't know you, but I'm just so proud of you. And I think you're a fantastic role model to people. So it's not really a question, but it was just something that I wanted to say to you.
Thank you so much. That is a really intense story. I can picture it in my mind as you were saying it. And yeah, I'm sure we have a lot to talk about as women, you know, as married women who've had similar experiences. That is scary. And, you know, like you said, luckily he's strong, he's a boxer, but who knows, they could have had a weapon. I mean, you could have not walked away from that situation in the way that you did. So, yeah, I'm glad you guys were safe through that. And, it's crazy. And, you know, it may be that I shouldn't have gone back to market, you know, maybe I shouldn't have. I know that it was a conversation my husband and I had to have many times. He was there with me at market, and then on times when he couldn't be, we had a male friend that would come. So it wasn't as though I was completely alone, but it was just wild. And, you know, the market staff would say, well, if there's protesters, you know, you just tell the police. Well, you know, then I would tell the police and the police wouldn't do anything. There was one instance when I asked a police officer who was there, I said, could you just stand by my booth, please, for the duration of the market? I mean, so I thought, why not? If he's getting paid to be at the market, why not just post him right by the booth? And then that way customers can feel safe coming up to shop and I feel a little safer. And he said, oh, no, I don't think that would be good for business, and kind of walked off. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I think it'd be great for business. But yeah, you can't always rely, I suppose, on the police to protect you either, or on the justice system to do the right thing.
Folks, Sarah and her family have, this is a textbook case of anti-whiteism and how they behave. And there are a number of lessons that can be learned, taken away from this for our empowerment. Number one, I mean, just the fortitude, the courage, the tenacity, the clarity of thought that Sarah and her husband, her family have exhibited throughout the totality of this persecution, this discrimination, this prosecution, in ways by the anti-whites of this lovely family. They've really endeavored to do everything they can to put them through hell. And so this is another case. I mean, looking at Sarah's family is looking at like James Edwards' family and how they survive and thrive under the persecution, prosecution of anti-whitism in every way, shape, and form, far worse than what drive off most white people in fear. One of the most important things to take away is understanding that these people are not the names that they give themselves, and they don't have the goals that they give themselves. They're not looking for some sort of utopia at the end of some rainbow. Their whole existence is focused on victimization of Western kind and Western civilization. And they get satisfaction after going after the avatar of Western kind and Western civilization. And that is whomever they can get their hands on, whomever they can pick and select. And it doesn't matter what lives they're ruining in the process of doing it, because that person, that family, in this case, Sarah and her lovely family, represent the avatar of all of Western civilization, of all of the things that these people are jealous and envious of. And that is why they're so fanatical in their hatred. That is why it is so irrational in the way they despise. They talk about abhorrent. They are loathsome, odious, egregious pieces of filth, every single one of them. Every single one of them, from the streetwalker all the way up to that mayor, who probably has also walked the streets, need to be imprisoned. They are the ones who need to be punished as a consequence of their ideology, as a consequence of their thought, and more importantly, and this goes to my question, as a consequence of the terror that they have inflicted, the sociopolitical terror, which, of course, is the textbook definition of terrorism in the United States, the terror that they have inflicted on this family, specifically on their children. Now, Sarah's husband has been a great champion, a great hero, defending his family. He's there. He's ready to act in their defense, but he is not omnipresent. He can't be everywhere at all times. He wasn't there when the little boy goes to the mailbox and sees blood. Yes, it ends up being fake blood, but to him, in that moment, permanently staining his entire life was blood all over the mailbox, the horror that he sees in his parents' eyes, the confusion, the fear. And that doesn't matter to the anti-whites. It doesn't bother them at all that they're doing that to these children. And I'll just say this, as I ask Sarah to share with us the horror that her children are actually going through. I know that they are being stalwart and they're handling the pressure as best they can, but it is important for everyone to know the terror that these children are being put through as a consequence of the behavior of these anti-whites. A mother can look past the stiff upper lip of her little boys, and she can see the pain and the fear behind their eyes. But I'll say this as I ask the question of Sarah to speak to us about what her children are going through. And that is, the next time these anti-whites are going to have a little get together, I don't care if it's 50 or 100 or 200 at whatever city center that they're having it, to talk about things like you and your family, let me know. I'll go there alone and I will speak to every single one of these people. I'll get up at the lectern and we'll see their very worst, and I'll be happy to respond. But I would like now, if you could, and also over the course of the rest of this time that we have with you, dear sister, if you could tell the good people who are watching where they can go and what they can do to help you and your family as you are persecuted and terrorized by the anti-whites. So please, how is this affecting your children?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jason. Well, really quickly, I want to say, as far as taking time out to go to some of those meetings, another thing I wanted to mention really quickly, if you don't mind, before I talk about the children, is that during all of that stuff going on throughout 2019, there were so many times when my husband and I thought, okay, well, we need to do some sort of activism to speak out against this. Like, you know, we had considered, okay, maybe we should rent a table in Info Alley and distribute our own flyers that are debunking the things these people are saying about us, right? But the reality of it is that we're a small business. My husband and I do all of the planting, the seed ordering, the labor, the maintenance, the packaging, the harvesting, and the marketing website management, talking to customers, taking orders, manning the booth. We do all of that, just him and I. We don't have any employees. We have one volunteer who occasionally comes, like maybe once a month or something. So we did not have the resources to, you know, to pick up and am I get, it's like you have a choice. Am I going to go downtown and stand and speak at a podium with a bunch of haters who want me dead? Or am I going to plant another row of, like, you know, sweet potatoes or something today that's going to hopefully help make me money? But yeah, the children, I would say it's been eye-opening. My eldest definitely has more of an understanding, I would say, than the younger two. And he's the one who found the fake blood in the mailbox and also was aware of all the nails that were dumped in our driveway as well, which is another incident that occurred here at our house. They came in the night and dumped about 300 and maybe 400 nails in the driveway. They have lost a lot. They used to go to farmers market every week, and it was definitely like a happy place. Several of us vendors are, we all had children, and they would kind of run around like a little pack, the little farmers market vendor kids, you know. All of their parents are growers, and so they kind of had that camaraderie, and, you know, they would go around, they'd go over to the prepared food area, and the bakers would give them free croissants, and it was something that they looked forward to every week. And of course, now they cannot go back. They'll never forget seeing all the people dressed in black like that coming up to our booth. They were scared. They were very scared. My youngest one, who was still a breastfeeding baby throughout the summer of 2019. Well, I should say, for the past decade, no, regardless of how old my babies were, I would always wear them to market on the front. You know, see, you see moms wearing them on the baby carrier. And that way I could still be at market with the baby right there. And so summer of 2019, I was still taking the youngest one occasionally. And I know that that might sound crazy because it was a very scary, kind of dangerous, unquestionable or questionable situation. But at the same time, a lot of mothers may understand that they're kind of just a part of you when they're that young and they're breastfeeding. They go everywhere with me. I'm very much into the attachment parenting type of thing. We don't leave our kids at daycare centers or with people we don't trust. I mean, so I had brought the baby, and in the carrier, there are pictures of these anti-whites who took my picture and posted it online and said, who needs a bulletproof vest when you have a baby on you? This is the kind of stuff, you know, this is the kind of thinking that these people have. And it's just like, oh, okay. Yeah. And I'm the one who deserves harsh treatment, that I'm the one who is the problem with the farmer's market, Mr. Mayor. I'm the reason why you had to shut down the farmer's market. You know, sorry, I call bull. When the mayor shut down the farmer's market, he cited concerns over vendors with ties to, quote, white supremacist groups. So yeah, this has been traumatic. We don't take the children of any age to the market at all anymore. And it's just, yeah, it's been a trial for them for sure. And if anything, this has been very educational for our oldest son to see how anti-whites behave and, you know, towards innocent people. So.
Well, this story is very important. And there's a couple of things there that made me smile, actually. I know exactly what you mean when you're carrying the baby on your front, because whenever we take Sophia anywhere, I always strap her to me. And although she's getting a bit older now, she's actually 18 months old today. It's she's made the big 18 months. Now, mainly if I try and strap her to me, she just keeps saying walk incessantly until I let her down. But when you've got them on your front, you are acutely aware of their safety sort of ahead of your own. And obviously it does go through your mind when you're a parent and you face this kind of thing. I've been questioned about this from my partner. She says to me, well, what if we go out? What if we're out, me, you and Sophia, and we're just walking around town and somebody confronts you and you've got Sophia on your front in the carrier. What do we do then? What happens to her? And these things are very, very worrying. And some people might say to me, Mark, Sarah's a very brave woman, but having her on this show, having her tell her story might scare some people off. It might be something that upsets some people. It might make certain people less likely to want to get involved in nationalism. And my answer to those people, because I've been listening very carefully to your story, the story that you've told tonight, the information you've put forward tonight, and I've also listened to interviews with you earlier on today. I listened to the full Red Ice interview you did. And I've got to disagree with anyone who doesn't want these stories to be heard. And there are people who always say to me, Mark, you know, these shows should all be positive. Telling these stories scares people off. But I think these stories are important. Because what Sarah's been through is terrible. But this isn't just about Sarah. And people might be thinking, what do you mean? This is all about Sarah. No, it's not. What Sarah is going through is terrible. What she's been through is terrible. But this isn't just about Sarah. This is about us all. And not just us. Because yes, myself, I could be a victim of this. My partner could be a victim of this. Sophia could be a victim of this. Laura could be a victim of this. And Sam could be. And in fact, they have been. Jason could be a victim of this. And anyone who puts their head above the parapet could be a victim of this right now, in the immediate future, in the here and now. But this is bigger than all of that. This is bigger than Sarah, it's bigger than me, it's bigger than Laura, it's bigger than Jason, it's bigger than the entire audience we've got here tonight, which will be thousands and thousands of people. I think there's about 1,600 watching on DLive now, and there'll most likely be about the same watching on Radio Albion. But it's bigger than all of them. What Sarah has been through, and what Sarah is going through, is what every single person of European descent will face in the future when we're a minority. Because I say this time and time again, this isn't just about displacing us. This isn't just about replacing us. This is about turning us into a minority, and not just a minority, because minorities today are treated very well, but we will not be. This is about turning us into a hated minority, a minority where things like this will happen to us and there will be no comeback. But not only won't there be a comeback, the mayor, the police force, the civil servants, the people running the market will stand there clapping the people doing this to us. And if this scares you off, if this worries you, if this is something that you think, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't get involved because this could happen to me. No, you are thinking about things the wrong way. This is why you need to get involved, because Sarah's story is a window to our future, to the future for all people of European descent. And if this isn't waking you up, if this isn't making you say, God, I need to get involved and I need to fight back against this, then you need to look at yourself. Because I can tell you this, Sarah did nothing wrong, okay? And Sarah wasn't, and this is no offense, you were not a leader of the movement. You weren't somebody like me and Laura who are out there putting our faces out there and saying more or less, come and get us. You were just a woman wanting to make a living who had pro-white views, who wanted to do the best for her little boys. And that's the key here, because they did this to Sarah, not because she's me and Laura and Jason, but because she wanted the best for her little boys. And if you're a white person and you want the best for your white children, if you've got white children, you're a white person with white children, and you want the best for them, these people will do this to you. They will hate you and they will persecute you and they will tear you down because you want the one thing that they can't stand the thought of. And that's a good future for white children. And that's what this is all about, people. If you don't act now, if you don't get off the bench now, if you don't get involved, if this story doesn't make you want to put your boots on and do something, well, I don't know what will, because this story tells you that what's going on today to this one courageous lady will be happening to every white person who loves their children and wants the best for them and doesn't want to force this anti-white garbage down their throat. And the fact this story is being told today is almost poetic, because today it's Holocaust Memorial Day. Today it's the most holy day in the anti-white calendar. It's the day when we all have to be force-fed white guilt. And right now at 8 p.m., we in the UK are all meant to be putting tea lights in our windows. We're all meant to be lighting a candle in the window of our houses to remember people that we've never done anything wrong to. The British people didn't participate in the Holocaust. And my views on the Holocaust are very well documented. I've been putting out a video today that I made some time ago called The Holocaust, an Instrument of White Guilt. My views on this are very well known. We didn't have anything to do with this. It wasn't British troops doing this. It wasn't the British establishment that were accused of this, but we're still beaten down with it. And I think the fact that we're hearing this story today, on this day, should be something that motivates you twice as much as it would any other day. Because this day today is a day they want us to hate ourselves. They want every white child to be demonized. So please listen to Sarah and let her story not depress you, but motivate you. Don't light an anti-white candle. Don't do that. Instead, let the flame of the European people burn even brighter within you and get out there and help us make a big difference. Sarah, back over to you. Please continue to tell your story.
Yes, thank you. I actually just posted something last night that I'm going to be lighting a candle for little Victoria Rose Smith, the three-year-old girl who was just beaten to death and tortured and had her hair yanked out by her non-white adopted parents who became famous on some stupid reality show. So I'll be lighting a candle for that little girl who the mainstream media, whose story the mainstream media, I'm sure, won't touch because it doesn't fit into their anti-white narrative. Another thing I wanted to say really quickly too is that with going to the farmer's market and going back week after week, looking back into kind of what we were thinking at that time, it's just that, you know, that's all right. That was our identity. I mean, we had vended at that market, which was a very popular, really nice market where people actually can make a living. You know, this isn't just a couple of guys with some pickup trucks in a parking lot. So well-established, it's one of the gems of Indiana. And going back week after week, it was largely because that is who we are. It's what we know. It's what we do. And as parents, you kind of want to try to have consistency for your children and not have, you know, these really drastic changes. I mean, what were we going to do? Just tell our kids, we don't sell at market anymore. Well, why, Mom? And secondly, why would we hide away? You know, that was another big reason that we continued going back week after week and selling, is because, you know, who has to go and hide? Rats. Not people like us. Not people who are innocent, who have never caused harm or wished ill on anybody else. Peaceful, law-abiding citizens with valid, factually based viewpoints that have no intention of harming others. We have no reason to hide. And so, you know, I guess if that sort of summarizes, because, you know, we have had people ask, well, why do you keep going back? And oh my gosh, you know, you took your baby to market. Well, sometimes we need normalcy in our life. And there's a fine line between making calls for safety, which are good to do, and we do make those calls, versus also living life. And you know, it's like, so if I stop going to the market and I stop going out with my baby in the baby carrier, what next? You know, do I have to start going out of town to the library that maybe isn't going to have the anti-whites there? Do I have to start going to a different grocery store? I mean, it will never stop. You'll keep getting pushed out of every single space that you try to be in. If you try to move and hide and change your name, I mean, you're going to get, likely, you know, you might get doxxed all over again. Now, again, I'm not trying to be discouraging. It's just a matter of personal choices, and those are going to be different for every individual and every family. And in our situation, we were kind of trying to straddle that line of, yes, making safe decisions for our safety, but also living life and having some sense of normalcy for our children as much as we could. But yeah, there's I don't recall if there was another specific question there. Sorry, I got a little passionate.
I like the passion. We do have some super chats though, so we'll go through the super chats and we'll ask you any questions that are related to you, because we've already come up on the hour. As we've come up on the hour, I'm just going to open the lemons again for 5 minutes. So if anyone wants to donate via DLive, the lemons are open as we speak for 5 minutes, and we're going to do these super chats. The first one is from Glenn the Chinaman. Hello, my friend. $20. And he said, thank you very much. He said, did you hear that the UK is bringing in millions of Hong Kongs and Uyghurs? China's Politburo is planning repatriation of overseas Chinese and discouraging emigration. Contrary to popular belief, India will overtake China as the most populous country this year. China will have a fast shrinking population starting end of the year and a huge sex imbalance. Well, I'll talk about this one a little bit. We have been talking about the Hong Kong issue. I posted something to my Telegram recently about the 5.4 million Hong Kong residents that have been offered permanent residency in the UK. And I have noticed the West is desperate to bring these Uyghurs over here. And the Uyghurs are obviously Muslim, which is, again, a big problem for us here in the UK. But I do know about China's population problems and India's rapid population boom. And obviously, China trying to limit their population growth for a long time by having a one child to per family rule. But the problem is, Chinese inheritance goes down the male side of the family. So if you have a daughter, you basically lose your family name. And that led to this huge population imbalance due to the mass murder and abortion of female babies, which has led to this huge population problem they've got now. Now, I think if any country could sort themselves out in this situation, it would most likely be China, because they are very, very good at population control. But I am aware of that. Laura, this is obviously a bit of a British themed question, but would you like to comment on this massive influx of Hong Kong residents and Uyghurs that we're about to see?
Yeah, well, we've been writing about it on the Patriotic Alternative website since it was first announced. I think we have maybe 5 or 6 articles up about it. One thing I've noticed is that the number keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. What number is it going to stop at? And then the other thing, and this is the most disgusting thing about it, is that conservatives or so-called patriots seem to be the ones who are egging it on. You know, who are the ones on social media saying, one of them was suggesting that we start a new Hong Kong in the north of England, in our industrial towns. Well, what about us? You know, I'm going to say it again, but we were never asked. Were we ever asked if we wanted to have one of our mill towns demolished and turned into Hong Kong 2.0? Just disgusting. They've got no thought to the idea of community and history and heritage and having a relationship with your neighbours and having a shared language and culture. They just don't care about that at all. And their stupid argument that these people are high IQ, therefore they'll integrate. They don't integrate. Anywhere you go, they have their own little communities. Every city has a Chinatown. If they integrated, we wouldn't have a Chinatown. And also, I've been to Sydney in Australia, loads and loads of Chinese people there. They've basically just took over. It's like a foreign country. They have their own shops where the shop signs are all in Chinese, so you don't know what they sell. They have like takeaways where you phone up and they're speaking their own language, so you can't buy from them. It's like a little country inside a country, and that's what they do. It doesn't matter if they've got high IQs. So we completely oppose it at Patriotic Alternative, and we'll continue to publish articles about it on our website.
No, I completely agree about this, and it is very frustrating to see these civnats and sort of Sargon types talking such nonsense about this, making out this is going to be absolutely wonderful for us and that these people will all integrate, they'll all be part of Britain. They won't, and it will also lead to an even more rapid demographic change, which will see us become a minority. So thank you for the question in the super chat, Glenn. It's very much appreciated. Serena JB, lovely to hear from you as always, gave £5. Thank you very much. And she says, a courageous lady. Do you think that the reasons leftists are so aggressive towards us is that in some way they understand their views are built on a very weak foundation? Well, I think we'll go around the group on that, but I have to say yes. You know, when social media platforms were open and it was all about debate, we wiped the floor with them. You know, I had videos with a million plus views. You know, what did they do? They stopped us from going on social media platforms and started physically attacking us. They didn't start deplatforming us and physically attacking us because they were winning the argument. They did it because they were losing. What do you guys think? We'll go around. We'll start with you, Sarah, then Laura and Jason.
Yes, absolutely. As I said earlier, when I was younger and in my anti-white days, and of course, I'm just one example, I was often regurgitating talking points without any true knowledge or facts behind those talking points. And so as a former leftist anti-white, I've come to my views with true objectivity. I mean, I took what I knew then and what I was learning and I, you know, examined them up and down. And I mean, I'm not kidding you. My husband and I would have these conversations and we would say, is this right? Like, I mean, our thinking was changing so drastically, but sure enough. And as I said on Jason's show, you know, it's like 1 + 1 = 2, order of operations. And you keep getting what the true answer is to these issues. And yes, we have the facts on our side and that's why they try so hard to silence us. And, you know, an example I give is, let's see, maybe 4 years ago, I was involved in debates with these radicals, these anti-whites. And, you know, I was talking about the concerns of my people becoming a minority in America. And they said back then, for just a short mere 3 or 4 years ago, that was a right-wing conspiracy theory. Oh, that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. Well, now that's all out the window. And it's, oh yes, absolutely. You're going to become a minority. It's going to be a quote, unrelenting stream. I think that's a Joe Biden quote. And it's a good thing. And if you have a problem with it, then, you know, you're, oh, well, here, let's think of a label or a mean name to call you today. And that's all they have. They have name calling and censorship. So, yeah, that's definitely one of the reasons that they go so hard against us.
What was the question? Sorry, Mark.
The question was, it was from Serena JB, and it was, do you think they attack us and resort to violence because they can't argue with us and they realize that their own positions are built on weak grounds?
Yeah, of course they do. And I mean, that's why they're trying to get us suspended from social media. And that's why they attack us in real life. They never have a discussion with us and they lie constantly and they have to lie constantly. And another thing that I've noticed as well, I noticed it a long time ago, is that they don't have genuine support for their movement. So what they try and do is, rather than rival us and put forward their own value system and say, guys, this is what we stand for, why don't you come and join us? Nobody joins them. All they do is attack us and try to get us shut down. Their whole worldview is just being anti us. They stand for nothing. So yeah, it's a short answer, but yes is the answer.
The question has two parts, really. And that is, the first one is, what motivates the anti-white? And the second is, then why do they have to do what they do when it comes to whether or not to debate us or to allow people to even hear us speak? So the first part is, why do they hate us? It's born out of jealousy and envy, both for the white anti-white and the non-white anti-white. Well, the white anti-white doesn't feel a connection to us, the great heritage, the great lineage, the great epics, the great heroes, the great stories. It's also about, when it comes to the non-white as well, the anti-white, non-white, it is jealousy over the beauty, jealousy over the dignity conferred by that history, jealousy over the health, jealousy over the accomplishments, jealousy over the creations, and et cetera. They then end up saying or finding themselves to be a victim. They named themselves victim, because they feel inferior in our presence. Not something that we tell them that they are, but something that they tell themselves that they are. It's an estimation, it's a measurement that they make of their own making. They then, because they have named themselves the victim, they gain the right to self-defense. As a victim defending oneself, you can be fanatical and anything goes, and no morality, no virtue, no anything gets in the way, because you're the victim being victimized. You have a right to defend yourself. That's taking place in their minds, since they can't get revenge in their minds against a god who had done this, or a fate who had done this, or whatever it might be. There is only one thing that they can get their revenge on, and there only one thing that they can punish for being what they believe is better than themselves. And that's really what anti-whiteism is all about. It's about victimizing the Westman for the feelings of inferiority that the anti-white feels in themselves as a consequence of Western kind just existing and being able to see them and live around them and etc. So then they want to move against us, but you can't move against us. You can't victimize Western kind and Western civilization on the ground simply that you are jealous, that you are envious. So then you have to create a series of excuses. These in Going Free we refer to as the myths of pretext, moralized, intellectualized, and sentimentalized reasons in order to victimize us. They now call that they now use those as the reasons to achieve what they refer to today as equity, which is being written into all of our laws and all of the presidential decrees that are happening right now. The word equity is everywhere. And what bolsters the equity, the reason equity, the discrimination, the persecution of whites for the benefit, enrichment, and empowerment of non-white people? Well, it's the myths of pretexts. Why do they then not debate us? Why do they then censor us from the programs? Why do they then violently attack us to shut us up? It is because they know that these are pretexts, and pretexts are very easily swept aside, because you can see in their pretext what seems like these contradictory positions that they'll argue with verve and passion. It doesn't matter, as long as they arrive at anti-white conclusions, that is very easy for us to point out. And so they have to prevent us from being able to speak. They have to silence us in every way that they can. That is the reason why they silence us. And I'll pass it back.
Thank you. Great answers from everyone there. Max Anderson gave £4. Thank you very much. And he said, great stream, great people. I like Laura Towler's tea. Sarah, is there anything you sell that we could buy? Now, this is a great point, because obviously, Sarah, you are somebody who sells fresh produce. You are a farmer. That's your business. And we want to build up a network of pro-white businesses, or we want to build up ways we can support pro-white businesses. I don't know if you've disappeared, but is there anything that we could buy from you? Is there anything you could, is there any way you could set up an online shop and we could buy things from you?
I'm sorry, I had to step away to put a log into the wood stove because the fire was dying, and I missed the first part of your question.
The first part of the question was, the person who asked the question said, thank you, you know, for everything that we all do. But he said he's a big fan of Laura Towler's tea. And is there anything you could sell in a similar way so that we could support you financially?
Yeah, that's a great question. We are certainly exploring options there. I'm looking forward to trying your tea, by the way, Laura. We're big fans of tea, so I'm looking forward to the shipping coming to the United States, and I've been very inspired by what you've done. One thing that we are selling currently are t-shirts and these, actually, if I might say, very nice coffee mugs that have our logo on them. And that is actually specifically for legal expenses, but it's been, you know, an interesting process. And so it did kind of get my mind, my gears turning, I should say, about being able to market a similar line of things that's not just for legal expenses. I am a weaver, and I do typically have my handwoven textiles for sale on our website. Right now, I don't have any inventory, but I do custom orders. And my husband also does a little bit of wood carving on the side. So we do have some of our handmade things that we sell in addition to our produce locally. But yeah, we want to explore that. Actually, a friend of ours is trying to talk me into, talking me into it, but he had a fantastic idea that I might pursue. I don't know if I should give it away, but hand-sewn 1950s style cotton and silk pajamas, which would be amazing. I'm not much of a seamstress. As I said, I'm a weaver, so I weave cloth, but I haven't done a whole lot of tailoring and seamstress work, but I think it's a great idea. So who knows, maybe we'll pursue something like that. But It's a great question, and we are pondering possibilities.
Well, if you want some advice, and this is just a small bit of advice, if you are producing something that you're going to sell, do try and work with the produce you produce. And if you can, you know, something like pickles, preserves, something that could easily be posted that people would reorder again and again. Because obviously Laura's now branching out into coffee and to other types of tea, but they are things people will repeat order. You know, there's only so many coffee mugs you can have, but I think I drink about 3 or 4 cups of tea a day. So it's something I keep on ordering. So I'm sure you guys grow something or make something that could be put into a preserve or a jam or something like that. And, you know, I like to have honey or jam on my toast in the morning. And if there was a nationalist jam producer, I would definitely buy nationalist raspberry jam. So some thoughts there, and hopefully we can build that kind of a network of nationalist producers around the world. Now, I've got a very generous super chats here from the Flying Dutchman. He gave $100. Thank you very much, my friend. Very, very generous of you. Very much appreciated. I can't thank you enough. Basically, these donations, they go towards my costs so I can do this full time. This means an awful lot. Thank you very much, my friends. His comment is, facts, logic, and an appreciation for oneself and ancestors, striving for a better future for all peoples versus anarcho-communism Marxism that burns, destroys, intimidates, lies, and even kills in an attempt to turn the world upside down and ultimately subjugate us all. Well, very true, my friend, and thank you for the generous super chat. Stanley Sloggett gave £10. Thank you very much, my friend. He says, I only have one thing to say, 14. Well, thank you very much. David Marcus gave £20, and this is very, very interesting, and I've seen this popping up in a lot of places. So thank you so much for the donation and the super chat, David. He says, Bill Gates is buying up huge swathes of American farmland. Now, to Sarah and Jason, would you like to comment on that? Because I've seen that being posted around a lot on alternative social media recently.
Who
Sarah, well, you can go ahead first, please, especially since you're the one who's in farming.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Well, again, we're a small-scale farm, which is very different than some of these large industrial agricultural operations. But, you know, it's wise for there to be many, many small farms to support a nation's food supply, or at least supplement. That's a very wise way to have your nation set up. And what we're finding that is happening is that small farms are being destroyed and ruined for various reasons. There's all sorts of new laws that are getting passed, and these farm bills that are getting passed that are forcing small business and small growers to have to set up expensive operations, like, you know, stainless steel washing stations and things like this, if you make a certain amount of money over, you know, if you're in a certain bracket. And these laws that they're passing are making it so that small farmers can't compete with the big farmers. So that's the first thing I want to say. Secondly, Jason mentioned on one of your shows, Jason, a month or so back, about the South Africanization of something about this bill that's up right now about, if I'm not mistaken, like repatriating giving farmland away to people based on the color of their skin. And again, it's obviously an anti-white policy that people who are white who want to farm, you know, they'll be excluded from that. And, you know, if you go on Google and just kind of Google around what kind of grants are available for non-whites or people who are in the protected classes, the elite classes of the West, there are just so many grants and opportunities for those types of growers. All the while, these non-white, anti-white activists get up on these podiums, like in our case, and say that people like my husband and I are preventing them from farming. That's an absolute lie. There are hundreds of grants and funding opportunities for non-white people in our country. So I'm not sure why Bill Gates is doing that. I did see that headline, but I do think it's scary. And as we know, looking to history, people who have the ideology known as communism have always destroyed the farmers. And we also see what's happening to the farmers in South Africa. So I do think this is something that farmers all over the West and in America need to become aware of. And this is something small farmers should be uniting over these issues.
Yes, Sarah, thank you for mentioning that. That's actually the Justice for Black Farmers Act is what it's called, of course. They always give these lovely names to these horrific anti-white endeavors. And it says, to address the history of discrimination against Black farmers and ranchers, of course, there has been the establishment or systemic system-wide discrimination. There is discrimination, systemic, establishment, legal against white farmers. And this bill actually goes beyond anyone, whatever you think is as horrible as you might think and your worst nightmares. It actually goes further than that. And with a Democrat House and a Democrat Senate and a Democrat president, they're going to be able to push this through with ease. That doesn't actually make, I mean, a lot of people have misconceptions, and I don't know, perhaps Bill Gates is playing a role in this. We saw that Zuckerberg played a big role in the election to the tune of $40 million, leasing out space for votes to be counted. And that is how Republican observers were allowed to be prevented. It was legal to prevent them from actually observing the vote counting. And that's one of the ways that his $40 million were spent. So we see this confluence and this harmony between anti-whites, billionaires and the like, big tech and elsewhere, working with anti-whites in the government. So perhaps Bill Gates buying up all of this farmland has something to do with this. But there is, I'll just say this and pass it back so we can get to the rest of the great questions from our community. And that is that this does not turn Black people into actual farmers. Like Sarah and her magnificent husband, they get out on the land and they work the way that we all understand farmers to work. But, you know, before the sun comes up and after the sun goes down and they're out there, their fingers are dirty. What this bill actually does, I read the entire bill. And for those out there who are missing these opportunities to see exactly what the anti-whites are doing, it's your fault that you're not coming over and listening to these 10-hour streams. I did a 10.5-hour stream this past Sunday. It's your fault that you don't know that this is happening. But they actually are not going to require or turn Black people into actual farmers. They're going to make them business owners of farms, magnificent, gigantic farms. The bill calls for the creation of a bank only for Black people, where they can get not only grants, but loans that will be forgiven every so many years. So you'll get a loan, you'll be able to defer your payments, and then it'll be forgiven. And what are the loans for from this Black bank only for Black people? It's for your labor that will work the farm. You're just, this just sets up the Black population of those out there who want to take want to participate in this program and who would not want to. This just sets them up with their alligator shoes and their Lexus and BMWs and whatever else that they're able to afford, because you as the American taxpayer will be paying for their labor on their farms. And it also sets up, last thing I'll add, millions and millions of dollars for the lawyers that will be employed by the federal government to seize land from recalcitrant landowners who don't want to sell to the government, who want to take the land so that it can be given free of charge to these, free of charge because we as the taxpayers, white Americans, will be paying for it, to these new Black farmers. So everything paid for them. This is the reality, because people don't want to see the anti-whites for what they are, but in going free, we are seeing them for what they are. And it is Sarah's right. She is, small farmers need to be coming together right now and defending themselves and defending their property and defending their right to grow the food that they, their families, and the rest of us need in this hellish dystopian future that the anti-whites are trying to make for us. But I pass it back to Mark.
Thank you. Very interesting responses there. It's almost, as we've said, what's happening in South Africa or has happened in South Africa. Very, very worrying. Old Mother Earth gave $3 US. Thank you very much. And said, did you see the case of South Lake Outstanding School in Texas that was told it needed to diversify their award-winning curriculum? The families and teachers got together and fought back. Now, I haven't seen this. Do you guys know anything about this? Well, sorry about that, Old Mother Earth. Thank you so much for the $3 US. I will look into that. I will keep that super chat up there and I will look into that. So my apologies about that. But it does sound good. Kraut Verget Nicked gave €25. Thank you very much for the generous donation. He said, to us people bearing the Promethean flame. Well, thank you very much, my friend. Candy Coloured Clown gave £14 and said, it's a wholesome white pill to know there are people out there like Sarah who are strong, unapologetically white, homeschooling mothers. Also, my Towler tea is great. Thanks, Laura. Is there a PA merch store opening soon? Well, thank you very much for the super chat, Candy Coloured Clown. It's very much appreciated. The only reason there's not a PA merch store, and this is actually my fault, so maybe the chat want to tell me that I'm doing things wrong. If I'm doing things wrong, I'm always open to suggestions. But I didn't want to put a merch store up because it always makes me cringe a little bit when a new organization pops up and the first thing on their website is T-shirts, hoodies, baseball caps, and before they've even got a manifesto or what they actually stand for up there on the website, you can buy tons of merchandise. So we didn't do it, and this really disgusted me when the Football Lads Alliance was started. When the Football Lads Alliance set up, the first thing on their website was merchandise, and there wasn't even a statement of intent or what they stood for. It was just buy our merch. So I know we're over a year in now, but it just always sits bad with me when these organizations pop up and they want you to buy things and donate straight away. I mean, I know there wasn't a donate button on our website for months and months, but I think it's very important that we as an organization do things in a way that wins trust with people, because although we do need money to move forward, we don't want to be seen as a Britain First style organization that's just all about selling hoodies and bending people over, begging for cash. So if people would like merchandising, and I am getting this wrong, if people do want hoodies and T-shirts and things like that, tell me. If I've got this wrong and you genuinely want that, I would be more than happy to produce it. So let the chat speak. And obviously, you know where you can write to me if you want to. And people seem to want 14 T-shirts. What do you think, Laura? 14 T-shirts?
Well, do you know the thing that I get asked about quite a lot on email is badges. People want little patriotic alternative badges. I guess the only concern I have is that somebody might buy a PA T-shirt and then go and do something bad, and then it'll get attributed to us, even though it's not a real supporter. But I mean, we try to be really creative with the way that we raise money. Obviously, we have, well, I have my own tea company now, and I sometimes donate money so that people can buy leaflets and stuff like that. We've got the baking competition and the recipe book, so that we're creating a community recipe book and people can buy that. And then all the profits have been donated to Patriotic Alternative. You're actually buying something there. So we've always tried to be more creative rather than just saying, can you give us money or can you donate money? I mean, sometimes people do just donate to us. And also Sam actually gets quite a lot of mail because people send him clothes, food and money and checks and stuff for the homeless outreach initiative. So I don't know. I mean, if people want merchandise, then we should probably do what they want, but we've kind of held off until now, haven't we?
Well, we have, and it's because we genuinely are doing this because we want to make a difference. We're not doing this so that at the end of the year, myself and Laura can sit drinking champagne, totaling up how much merch we've sold to people, you know, and so many nationalist groups in the UK. Like I said, the Football Lads Alliance, you couldn't tell what they were from the website, but you could buy a baseball cap, a hoodie, and a T-shirt, you know. And
I'll tell you who's the worst, Mac.
What's that?
I'll tell you who's the worst for this. Ricky Doolan. It's a different organisation every week with a new set of merch straight away.
Do you think he's got 8 million candles in his window tonight? I think he probably has. Sorry, I couldn't resist it. So yes, merchandising, if people want it, we will do it. Richard Wagner gave $3. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, rest in peace, Victoria Rose Smith, and said, white three-year-old baby beaten to death by black adoptive parents who were Black Lives Matter supporters. This is the future anti-whites want for our babies. Well, I'm going to say something, might not be popular with everyone, but I don't believe in interracial adoption. I think children need a mum and a dad, and those the mum and the dad need to be the same race as the child. I think black parents should adopt black children and white parents should adopt white children. And this nonsense of whites adopting black children as some kind of fashion statement like Madonna did is damaging to those black children. I think it's an act of abuse. And I think that this case is absolutely sickening. Protect White Babies gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, the most important question is who would win an arm wrestle between the well-endowed hunk, No White Guilt, and the absolute unit, Sam? What does the panel think? And please, people left me out of this. I've got to say, I've met them both, and No White Guilt is in very, very good shape, but Sam is a lot taller and a lot naturally bigger. And I think that, no offense to No White Guilt, but Sam does have the size advantage. And I've seen arm wrestling competitions, and when you see a really big guy, they can just put that bit more weight behind it. So what are you? Laura's got to say Sam, unless she's trying to enrage him for some reason. Sam probably said the tea wasn't very nice tonight, or, oh, didn't like your casserole, Laura. So she's now going to throw in with Jason. What are your thoughts, Laura?
Well, I obviously have to choose my husband. That goes without saying. Who do you think would win, Sam? He sat next to me.
I don't know. I'd be willing to have a little sparring with Jason there if he comes back to the UK.
Did you hear that? He said he's up for having a bit of sparring with you if you come back to the UK.
We could do that. I'll say that happily. That would be fun. But Sam was such a great guy when I was over there in the UK. I think that if we squared off, there would be no way for me to actually compete with any sincerity. I would just have a big smile on my face, and just he could go ahead and smash my arm in a second. I would be fine with that. Great guy. He stepped right up in the middle of that morning, and he's like, I'll drive you and take you right to the airport. And he was just a friend the entire way, telling me all about the flora and fauna of the UK. Great guy.
Sarah, who do you think would be the champ, Jason or Sam?
All I have to say is no more brother wars.
Well, that's a very, very diplomatic way to say Sam. So moving on, we've got Candy Coloured Clown said, gave $3. Thank you very much. She said, I'll be lighting a candle for the growing list of globalist victims. And he shared the link to our In Memoriam page. So thank you very much. And that's very important. On the PA website, there is a list of victims of anti-white racism. So go and check them out and spread the word. Candy Coloured Clown gave another £3. Thank you very much, my friend. You've been very generous this evening. He said, as an Aussie expat, I can confirm that the Redfern, Western Sydney, was so Chinese that they had billboards everywhere, only in Mandarin, especially at the train stations. Very, very telling. That's what they want here in the UK. And he goes on to say, keep up the good work. Well, thank you very much. Old Mother Earth shared the South Lake Families website that she mentioned earlier. So I'm just going to pop that link in the chat for everyone to have a look at. So that link has been shared. Thank you for the $3, Old Mother Earth. And finally, Rory Herbert gave £3. Thank you very much, my friend. I said, my ex-headmaster, Captain John Webster, was one of the first British officers to discover Bergen-Belsen concentration camp in 1945 and initially thought he had come across a lunatic asylum. Comments. Well, all I can say is, in relation to this particular issue, I've got to be very clear here. Even if you did take the official number of 6 million, even if you said that was actual fact, 100% fact, it would still absolutely pale into comparison when compared to the number of people killed by communist regimes, which in the last century numbered well over 100 million people. Now, that is very telling. It's very telling that we constantly hear about Nazism, the Holocaust, et cetera, ad infinitum. But we never hear about the regimes that murdered in excess of 100 million people. And you have to remember, many of those 100 million people were white Christians in Russia and Eastern Europe, and they were killed by a certain ethnic group that has a massive interest in promoting the Holocaust as the greatest evil that ever happened. And I've repeatedly said, if you take the 6 million as the official number, and What I mean by this is every single historical occurrence can be debated. You can debate the number of people killed by Mao. You can debate the number of people killed in the Holodomor. You can debate the number of people killed by Stalin, by Lenin, by Fidel Castro, by Pol Pot. You can debate all of those things. But the world over, there is one thing it is illegal or greatly taboo to debate, and that is the Holocaust. And I believe it is very telling that this one historical occurrence is not up for debate, is set in stone, almost like some kind of holy religious truth. And I believe the reason for that is because it is the foremost instrument of white guilt. It is something that is pushed down white people's throats more than anything, because it is done so to prevent us from advocating for our own interests and rights. And I hope that answers your question well enough. Do you guys want to add anything to that? Laura, Sarah, or Jason, do you want to add anything to the issue of the concentration camps?
Actually, earlier on when we first mentioned the Holocaust, there was something that I was going to say, because it was probably one of the events from last year which annoyed me more than anything else. And I was so angry about it, and I was going to make a video about it. And then you made a video about it, so I was like, okay, I'll leave it. And it was when that guy, Konstantin Kissin from Trigonometry, interviewed, I suppose we're not on YouTube, so I can speak freely, interviewed a young white girl who had been raped and groomed by Pakistani men. And she was talking about her experiences, which were just horrible, absolutely horrible. And his response to her was to say, yeah, but you lot can't collectivize against it, because remember what happened to my people. And I was so angry when he said it, like, how dare you say that she is not allowed to defend herself as a group of people against rape, child rape, because the Holocaust. And it is controversial to say it, but it is something that they use to stop white people from collectivizing. But they're collectivizing in doing that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, just really quickly, and I can't really comment too much on it at this time, but essentially, it's as though the message is that if you and your people want to organize in your own group interests, then you're just like XYZ, right? So it is absolutely used, and it's effective, unfortunately.
Is there anything you'd like to add, Jason? Or
just another miss of pretexts, just to arrive at anti-white conclusions. And once we recognize and we lump all of these things together, then we stop having to have the historical knowledge of every period, of every event, of everything, getting drawn into these debates where you can't win because you're in the anti-white narrative. And so you lump them all together. There you have a bunch of pretexts to arrive at an anti-white conclusion. And so demonstrating that you're anti-white, end of conversation. That's how I handle it.
Well, thank you. And we've got one more super chat from William Lavana. He gave £3. Thank you very much. And he said, how about selling PA vests for litter picking volunteers? Well, that's something we could definitely do. And it's something I'd be happy to do. In fact, I was going to speak to Laura and Sam actually about a litter pick in an area I know. So it's really, really overwhelmed. And there's a pond with some swans and it's full of beer cans and stuff. And I'd love to see us clean that up, because it always makes me very sad to see sort of swans or animals face that kind of thing. Richard Wagner gave $3 again and said, Mark, do you know if David Duke's bookstore is now fine with the payment process? Does still want a copy of My Awakening? Well, Richard, let me ask him on Friday, and I will announce that at the beginning of next week's show. I will send you an email, because I've got your email. So thank you for the super chat. Now, we do have some unpaid questions. Connor Chickmeister said, Mark, are you aware of the great reopening event due to take place this weekend? Businesses throughout Britain are encouraged to open their doors in defiance of the COVID restrictions. Yes, we are, and we will be. Myself and Laura and all the PA accounts will now be advertising that on Friday heavily, and we'll talk about it more on the PA stream. So thank you for reminding us, but we did mention that at the beginning of the show. Bailiff Basher gave has four up likes, and he said, Brian Rose from London Real was fined £200 for campaigning in his bus for the London mayor elections in May, whilst other woke candidates campaigned without any police intervention. Yes, I don't know if people are aware of Brian Rose from London Real. He's kind of a quirky little guy who's running as independent mayor of London. And he does one of these things where he gives people pep talks, and he had David Icke on and got into a bit of trouble. He's not interviewed me yet, but I don't live in London, so I suppose I'm not that relevant down there. Or not so much as the people he interviews from London. And he says, and then we've got one from It's Time to Grow and Learn. Mark, even if this global lockdown may take a couple of years in this decade, could I ask whether you and Laura have plans or hopes to resume outdoor events soon despite these restrictions? Well, I think I speak for both me and Laura when we say we are still holding outdoor events. So, yeah, we're still going ahead with that. And throughout summer, we will have our usual outdoor events the best we can. And if we can't hold conferences, we will find a field. We will put a giant tent in it and we will do something good. Laura, is there any progress on Fashtonbury?
I'm so excited for Fashtonbury. Yeah, we had this big plan of having like people playing music and little stalls where people can do their own baking and bring their own homegrown produce and all that kind of stuff. But obviously we can't do anything like that. I mean, I think it's probably best to maybe wait until the lockdown lifts and then do it, because it's going to be a nightmare. They are going to target us if we do it, and they probably will arrest people and they probably will fine people. But it's just such a shame because we had all these things planned and we've not been able to do it. I will say that there is stuff happening. You know, there are still regional events happening. We just have to be very, very careful about the things that we post on social media. We have to be careful that we don't break any official rules, because the rules are different for us. And, you know, BLM or migrants in Wales are allowed to go out and protest and they don't get any fine. But if we do, then we don't want to, you know, all the money that people donate to PA, we don't want to bankrupt us and it go on court fees and stuff. So there is stuff still going on if you get in touch with your regional organiser. But yeah, it's just a shame that the big events can't go on. Or are you saying that we do it in a field, Mark, and all stand apart from each other? Are you allowed to do that?
I don't know. I think we could give it a go, couldn't we? We have to do something. We will be doing something. So Candy Coloured Clown asked, can PA hold a Black Lives Matter event so we can meet up? Well, that is a very, very interesting idea. I'm just going to open the lemons again for one last time tonight. This will be your last chance if you want to send a donation through DLive. I'm opening this and I will do the chest in a couple of moments, so we will distribute the rewards as well. I'll put the countdown timer on that as we speak. I know people get annoyed with me when I forget to do the treasure chest, but the treasure chest is now counting down. We have another question here from Antiguan, who said, Mark, thoughts on moving to decentralized services like Pleroma, I've never heard of that, it's a Twitter alternative, and PeerTube, YouTube alternative to combat deplatforming. Well, we are backing ourselves up everywhere as much as we can. So we are doing our best to spread ourselves as wide as we can. But it is time consuming, because every time a new platform pops up, if you totally embrace it and spend 3 days uploading your video, only for that platform to disappear or for it, you know, not to take off, it is very, very time consuming to do that. I know Jason spends a lot of time on multiple platforms. Maybe you could talk a bit about that, Jason, because I've seen you streaming on Facebook a bit recently.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I added two more platforms to stream on because I received I received, just like the rest of you, the hate messages, the evil messages. And one guy just 2 days ago sent, and I don't know if it was an anti-white pretending to be one of these antique nationalists, but he had an antique flag as his avatar with a couple of numbers that people are familiar with. And he sent me a video of a man who had been in an auto accident, and he was burning alive and screaming. And this guy wrote that he wanted to see me die that way, and he was going to ensure that I died in fire and flames, screaming like that. So I decided, well, thanks a lot. I decided to jump on two more platforms to live stream from as a consequence of that message. So I think I live streamed to about nine different platforms. simultaneously? Is that is what else did the questioner really want to know about that? Just the I guess whether or not it's
I think that's about it really. Just are we going to be doing that? Somebody's asked this as an interesting question. Rogue Mayhem says, can you debate Paul Weston, Mark? Well, of course I can debate him. I very much doubt he would have what it takes to debate me. But if he wants to jump in, I've not heard anything of that man for quite some time. But if Paul Weston, this isn't Paul Joseph Watson, it's Paul Weston, a guy in the UK who has been involved in a couple of minor political parties. If he wants to debate me, he's more than welcome to. I certainly don't run from any debates. And, you know, if that's his thing, if he wants to jump in, I would be more than happy to have a chat with him. And hopefully it would be something that was quite productive for both sides. And the final question we've got is from William Lavana. He said, Holocaust Memorial Day Fund on Twitter are spreading the hashtag light the darkness based on the Jewish religion. The Gentiles represent the darkness and they represent the light. It's a clear threat. Thank you very much. And somebody else has said, it's time to grow and learn, as asked Mark. I'd love you to debate Styx, but don't be surprised if he cowers out. Well, actually, me and Styx have quite a good relationship, and we have chatted before, and we found mainly common ground. So that was quite good. So we've dealt with all the questions and all the super chats. So thank you very much, everyone. And I think it has been a very, very important show, but we still have 10 minutes left. Are there any last questions for Sarah? And if there isn't, I've got a question for Sarah, but does Laura or Jason, do you have any last questions for Sarah?
Well, I would just like to quickly say that I've dropped a link in the live chat. We need to be supporting this family. It's very important. Because the liquidity is how the world turns. That's just a reality. Money defeated religion a long, long time ago. And when you live in a world where people get what they want and get what they need by way of dollars and cents, then you need to help people out in that way. And Lord knows that the opposition, the anti-whites who are victimizing this wonderful family in particular, I want you all to really think about, meditate on what it would have been like for you to be a child in a family that is being victimized. You know, a child can be made to believe a lot of fanciful things. They can be afraid of the dark simply because it's dark. Try to imagine what it would be like to be a little boy or a little girl in a world where there are adults showing up and threatening the family and doing things like putting blood in the mailbox, nails on the driveway, showing up at the place of work. It is really horrific. So please support this family. And I will drop the link again to their, I guess it's the Schooner Creek Farm store. And you can't buy the groceries there, but you can buy a bunch of other wonderful things, not the least of which is what I will be purchasing. There is a 15-ounce Schooner Creek Farm mug. It is lovely. Sarah has used it several times over the course of the stream today. I'll be getting the 11-ounce mug, I think. It's selling for a mere $25. I will be paying $125 for that mug to help out this wonderful family. And I will be sharing that mug on the stream with all of you. So please do the same and follow these people. Sarah, anything, I know that there are so many things that are going on in your world, and there's a lot coming up. What would you like to share about what is right before you, right in the very near future, for your family and any challenges going on with the anti-whites?
Well, thank you so much, Jason, for your contribution and continued support. And yes, just to clarify, the mugs and t-shirts are for the legal expenses. So thank you so much for that. Well, I suppose I didn't get a chance to mention that the city is countersuing us for supposedly violating a vendor contract by suing them. So their argument is that because we signed a vendor contract, we've signed away our constitutional rights, which is just absolutely ridiculous. We've never had any violations at market or anything like that. Recently, just this past week, we completed depositions for the case, which is certainly a great accomplishment. Things are moving forward, and we're certainly feeling very positive at this time about our case. And also, I just want to say that our goal in the future is to continue doing what we've done. We don't, you know, our dreams are humble, and they include continuing to be able to farm and grow vegetables and herbs, and, you know, hopefully expanding our products into, you know, like the pickles and jams, as Mark was suggesting. That's certainly something we've talked about, the items we can ship. That's all we ever wanted to do, was just be able to raise our kids in a holistic, natural environment, homeschool, and work hard doing what we love, which is small scale farming. So we're going to keep doing that regardless of the outcome of anything. That's always what we'll do. So that's, you know, that's about all, I suppose. I certainly would want to direct people to our website where they can read more and find out more information, which is what you mentioned before. It's www.schoonercreekfarm.org. And that's
it. We will have that at the, make sure you email me as soon as the show's over, and we'll make sure everyone's social media links are in that. And if people want to go and buy a mug or help you in any way, that would be fantastic. And we are about hitting full time of the show tonight, but is there anything else you, before we wrap up with Jason Law, is there anything else you'd like to say, or anything else you'd like to bring our attention to? Because I think it's been a very powerful show tonight, and your story has been very, very illuminating. But is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap things up?
Well, I'm sure we could easily sit and talk for another couple of hours. It's been a great conversation. And so I'm not sure what else to leave everyone with other than just, you know, I suppose draw on the inspiration of the greatness of your ancestors, and don't be afraid to speak the truth. And right now we still have our voices and our ability to speak, and we need to be using them, in my opinion. So don't be afraid. Feel the strength of your ancestors in you to kind of guide you along. That certainly guided me along.
Well, thank you so much. It's been really inspirational having you on. And I think your story is very, very important. And obviously, everyone here on the panel and everyone at Patriotic Alternative wishes you all the best for the future. And we would love to have you back on in the future if there's any major updates, or, you know, to carry on telling your story. Because one thing that's very important about people like Sarah is they come on this show and they tell their story, but it's important we don't forget them. It's important that we don't just say, well, they've told their story, so next week there's going to be a new guest and we'll all move on. This is something that we have to stay on top of. People like Sarah are people that we have to keep promoting, that we have to keep helping, that we have to keep supporting, because they're on the front line. And as I said earlier, she didn't ask to be on the front line. She was thrust into this position. She's a very courageous woman. She's a very hard worker. And I salute her because to stand firm through all of this and never back down, what an incredible person. What an incredible husband you must have. And I do send all my love and all my best wishes to your family, because as a father, I understand just how much worse this will be for you, that you face this with your sons. And, you know, if it was just you and your husband, it'd be one thing. But when you've got children, it makes the fight so much more personal. So well done, Sarah. And we will continue to support you. And all your links will be on the BitChute account later. And hopefully our very generous audience will continue to support you. Now, Jason, my friend, who is on tap? Where can we find you? And have you got any final thoughts before we hand over to Laura?
Well, it looks like we're at about a little over 2 minutes left, so we got some little bit of time. I don't have to rush necessarily. NoWhiteGuilt.org, NoWhiteGuilt.org. And by the way, we are busily rebuilding that website, and it is going to be marvelous when relaunched. This I can tell you. Everybody who has seen it says it's great. To carry on a Trumpism. You can also find us at theafterparty.tv, theafterparty.tv, where everything that Mr. George and I do will be located. This coming Thursday on the No White Guilt channel, as well as those eight other platforms now, thanks to the monster who wants to hear me scream while burning alive. Around nine different platforms or so total. You can find TAP at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will have Squatting Slav. He is back from the frigid north to share with us his tales, perhaps of anti-whites up in those climes. It's been wonderful, as always, to be able to appear here on PWR with the great Mark Collette, our leader, and Laura joining us today. It is always wonderful to see her beautiful face. And Sarah Dye, a beautiful woman, a beautiful family, beautiful husband, and a great salute to him and all that he has done to protect his wife and his family, and the courage that she has had as well to stand up against these anti-whites, as Mark pointed out absolutely accurately, that she did not designate herself as a leader for this sort of attention. The anti-whites have targeted her because they are monsters. She's done nothing wrong other than being a woman of the West who is raising a healthy and happy family of Western kind and without hatred of themselves. And that's why they target, and that's why we need to come to their defense. And that'll be it for me. I'll pass it back, Mark, so we can hear from Laura.
Thank you so much. Laura, what are your final thoughts? And obviously, I'll be seeing you very shortly. It'll only be, in fact, we have a hectic week, don't we, planned?
We do, yeah. We've got an alternative curriculum meeting tomorrow. And then we've got the January update for Patriotic Alternative on Friday night. And then we've got the book club on Sunday night as well. So, yeah, lots going on. I just want to say thank you for inviting me to guest host tonight. I've really enjoyed the stream. And Sarah, I find your response to the attacks incredibly inspirational. And I hope that you will stay in touch. It's nice to have other women to talk to. I think being involved in nationalism, mainly online, I find myself talking to men and boys most often, which is strange because at PA events there are actually quite a lot of women that attend the IRL events, but then online it tends to be guys. So all great guys, but it is nice to have another woman to talk to. So do stay in touch. Thank you to everyone who listened tonight as well. I hope you all have a lovely evening for the rest of the evening. And you can catch me and Mark at 7 o'clock, I think it will be, on Friday evening, where we'll be discussing everything that we've been getting up to this month with Patriotic Alternative.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Laura. Now, it has been a fantastic show, and we have had over 1,600 watching here on DLive, and we have had around 1,600, just under 1,600 on five under 1,600. So on Radio Albion, and we've had a few on Entropy as well. So great numbers tonight as well. 3,200 watching live, and the replay will be on BitChute. So that just leaves me to say, thank you so much. Thank you to Sarah. You are a very, very courageous woman. Hearts and minds are with you, and we wish you all the best in your struggle. And I am sure you will emerge victorious, and it will make you also your journey, political journey. It was very, very interesting to hear that too. Thank you to Jason also, as always. Fantastic working with you. And thank you to Laura, who I will be seeing Friday and Sunday. And remember, Friday is the PA roundup, but Sunday is the first book club. We've been doing the gaming nights, we've been doing the film reviews, but this is the first of our book clubs. So do tune in if you are an avid reader, because it's not just about the people reviewing the book. The author of the book will be joining us too. So I'm hoping that will be quite a special stream and something a little bit different. Now, that just leaves me to say thank you so much. Thank you to Sarah. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to Laura. Thank you to all the people who donated so very generously tonight. But most of all, as always, thank you to this incredible audience. This community is what we fight for. It gives us immense strength, and it is an honor and a privilege to be able to serve this community. Thank you so much. I love you all. Look after yourselves, and I will see you again on Friday. Stay safe, people, and I'll see you all soon. Thank you and good night.